Welcome to the Noracast Tech Briefing.
Good to have you with us.
We are tracking a major release from Z.ai today. They just dropped the open weights for GLM 5.3, and the benchmarks they are claiming for cybersecurity and vulnerability discovery are going to force some uncomfortable conversations in the industry.
We're also looking at a significant shift in U.S. space policy. The White House just signed an order to establish a formal U.S. Space Academy, modeled right after West Point. And later, we'll talk about a European privacy collective that just got hit with U.S. terrorism sanctions. Plenty to cover. Let's start with GLM 5.3.
A few days ago, we talked about a developer using GLM 5.3 through an API to root an Amazon Fire tablet. That was impressive on its own, but Z.ai just changed the landscape by releasing GLM 5.3 as open weight.
Right. And the fascinating part about this release isn't a massive leap in pre-training compute. The base model for 5.3 is exactly the same as GLM 5.2. Every single improvement they are reporting today comes entirely from post-training, using reinforcement learning environments.
That completely flips the script on how we think about scaling. If you can get state-of-the-art performance just by refining the post-training, the economics of frontier models look very different. You don't need hundreds of millions of dollars in compute to train a new base model from scratch every 6 months.
Exactly. You just need better reward models and smarter reinforcement learning pipelines. And the numbers back it up. On Terminal Bench 3.0, which measures agentic terminal interactions, it scored 28.3. That is the current state-of-the-art for open source. On their own Z.ai codebench, it shows a 50% improvement over GLM 5.2.
But the metrics that are really catching everyone's attention are the cybersecurity benchmarks. On CyberGym, which tests vulnerability discovery, GLM 5.3 scored an 84.5, and it more than doubled the performance of 5.2 on pure exploitation benchmarks.
Which brings us to the obvious safety question. Vulnerability discovery means the model can read through big code bases and reliably identify zero-day flaws. When you open source a model that is demonstrably highly capable at finding and exploiting software vulnerabilities, you're handing a very sharp tool to anyone with the hardware to run it.
Z.ai says they've done safety hardening, but we know how quickly open-weight models get fine-tuned to remove those guardrails. Once the weights are out there, the alignment is effectively optional for anyone who knows how to run a fine-tuning script.
It's a calculated risk on their part, and they didn't just release the main model. Alongside it, they also released GLM 5.3 Flash. This was previously known by the codename Ox Alpha.
The specs on Flash are intense. It's a native multimodal mixture of experts model. You're looking at 320 billion total parameters, but only 18 billion active during inference, and they shipped it with a 1 million token context window.
Releasing a 320 billion parameter MoE model under an MIT license is aggressive. It gives commercial developers almost zero restrictions on how they deploy it. The mixture of experts architecture is why they can get away with a model this large, because it's only using 18 billion active parameters for any given token. The inference costs and VRAM requirements are kept relatively low.
You can actually run that on high-end local hardware if you quantize it heavily. But again, watching how the open source community handles those emergent cybersecurity capabilities is going to be the real test over the next few weeks. We are in uncharted territory with a model this good at exploitation freely available online.
Moving to space. Yesterday, August 28th, President Trump was at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston to sign an executive order establishing the U.S. Space Academy.
To be clear, this is not a rebranding of Space Camp or a civilian educational program. The executive order outlines a formal, degree-granting, military-style institution. The president specifically said it will be modeled on existing service academies, like West Point and Annapolis.
The goal is to train a dedicated pipeline of service members, civil operators, and engineers. And they aren't just building this for the Space Force. The order explicitly mentions serving NASA and the commercial spaceflight industry as well.
That commercial integration is key. The talent gap in aerospace is a known bottleneck right now. As companies target lunar and eventually Martian missions, you need a large influx of highly trained operators.
A federal academy creates a centralized, government-funded pipeline for that talent, standardizing the education across military and civilian sectors.
The order establishes a presidential commission to figure out the logistics. NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman is chairing it, and NASA Deputy Administrator Matt Anderson is stepping in as executive director.
Putting Isaacman in the chair makes a lot of sense given his background. Before he was NASA Administrator, he funded and flew the Polaris Dawn missions, so he bridges commercial spaceflight and government operations intimately. But the commission has a huge job ahead of them. Establishing a new service academy from scratch is a logistical and financial mountain.
Right. An executive order can create a commission, but it can't appropriate funds. They're going to need Congress to authorize the budget to actually build a physical campus, hire the faculty, and sustain the program. And a space academy isn't just lecture halls. You need neutral buoyancy labs, simulators, centrifuges. It's wildly expensive infrastructure.
And then there is the political fight over where to put it. You already have lawmakers like Senator Ted Cruz lobbying heavily. Every state with an aerospace footprint, Texas, Florida, Alabama, California, is going to want this academy in their backyard for the federal funding and jobs it brings.
It also raises questions about overlap. The Air Force Academy already has robust aerospace engineering and space operations tracks. Carving out a completely separate institution for space means untangling decades of shared military education infrastructure.
True, but creating a standalone academy signals a permanent institutional shift. It tells the industry and international competitors that the U.S. views space not just as a branch of the Air Force, but as a distinct domain requiring its own dedicated culture, curriculum, and training pipeline.
We need to talk about a major policy move from Washington that is sending shockwaves through the privacy community. On August 26th, the U.S. State and Treasury Departments designated the Autisticy/Inventity Collective as a specially designated global terrorist. This is a big escalation. For context, the AI Collective is an Italy-based tech group. They provide encrypted email, web hosting, and a platform called NoBlogs. They've been around for years, generally serving activists, journalists, and privacy advocates.
The U.S. government is alleging that their digital infrastructure is being used by international far-left extremist groups and the PKK. Because of that, they applied Executive Order 13224 to sanction the collective itself.
Applying material support logic to a neutral hosting provider is aggressive precedent. Executive Order 13224 was signed right after September 11th to target the financial networks of terrorist organizations. Usually, counterterrorism sanctions target the individuals committing violence or the banks explicitly funding them. Targeting the infrastructure provider because bad actors use their encrypted email is a sizable shift in how these laws are applied.
The collective completely rejects the allegations. Their public statement was blunt. Anti-fascism is not terrorism. And legally, this creates a bizarre jurisdictional conflict.
Right, because they are based in Italy, and neither the Italian government nor the European Union lists the AI Collective as a terrorist organization. But because the U.S. controls so much of the global financial system, a Treasury designation effectively cuts them off from international banking, domain registrars, and cloud services worldwide.
It forces European allies into a tough spot. Do they comply with unilateral U.S. financial sanctions against a European entity that hasn't broken local laws? It's a direct challenge to digital sovereignty. If AWS or Cloudflare had users tied to the PKK, the Treasury wouldn't sanction the entire company. But because AI is a smaller, privacy-focused collective, they're taking the hit.
And it has every other privacy-focused hosting provider looking over their shoulder. If providing encrypted email to the public means you can be designated a global terrorist because of who anonymously signs up for an account, the legal risk of running that infrastructure just skyrocketed. It could severely chill the deployment of open-source privacy tools globally.
We're seeing some friction in the Anthropic developer ecosystem. A GitHub issue is gaining traction asking for native Firefox support for the Claude Agentic browser extension. Currently, Claude in Chrome lets the AI autonomously navigate pages and fill out forms. But if you develop on Firefox, you're locked out of those native automations. Though with Anthropic just introducing a built-in browser inside Claude Cowork, a standalone Firefox extension might not even be on their roadmap anymore.
On the space front, President Trump awarded the Congressional Space Medal of Honor to the Artemis II astronauts yesterday in Houston.
The crew includes NASA's Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christina Koch, and Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen. Back in April 2026, they set the human spaceflight distance record, traveling over 252,700 miles from Earth. That finally broke the Apollo 13 record from 1970. It's a rare honor. Only 34 people have ever received that medal.
Back to Anthropic tooling, there's another GitHub issue making the rounds, this one for the official C# SDK. Enterprise.NET developers want support to run Claude code programmatically. Right now, the TypeScript and Python ecosystems have first-party packages to run agent loops, manage tools, and handle sessions natively. But if you're building in C#, you have to shell out to the Claude CLI and manually parse newline delimited JSON. .NET teams are definitely feeling left behind here. The Free Software Foundation Europe and the Italian Linux Society have launched a campaign called Refund for Freedom, helping consumers reclaim the cost of pre-installed Microsoft Windows licenses.
They're providing standardized formal notice forms based on Microsoft's own end-user license agreement. They estimate you can demand about 55 euros for Windows 11 Home and 110 euros for Professional. Hardware vendors usually make this process intentionally difficult, but these templates might give buyers enough use to actually force the refunds.
Finally, a blog post by Terence Eden titled "It Works Better in the App" has been dominating Hacker News. It's a critique of services that artificially break their mobile web experience to force users into downloading native apps.
It's universally frustrating. You click a link, get a full-screen install wall, and lose basic browser functionality. The consensus in the discussion is that this friction is almost entirely driven by the need to collect ad tracking data and push notifications, rather than any real technical limitation of modern mobile browsers.
And that is the briefing for today.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more updates. Thank you.